Ambiente, biodiversité,
sustainable consumption,
protéger,
chocolate,
nature,
cacao, βιωσιμότητα,
Afrique,
fair trade,
America Latina,
gas nolicos,
αποψήλωση,
cambio climatico,
degrado forestale,
soja,
deforestation,
durabilité environnementale,
measures against deforestation under the spotlight.
Hi everybody, it is Maud, Pierre and Carlos from the Young Fairtrade Advocates. In this episode, we give the floor to producers and producer networks workers to travel through the food supply chain and to understand where and how some of the food we are finding in our supermarkets is produced and who is behind it. In this episode, we are discussing with producers from Latin America and Africa, as well as support networks and cooperatives that accompany small producers in their work. Meeting them was a unique opportunity to better understand the challenges they are facing and what, at all scales, consumers from the other side of the world can do to support them.
We're talking about their products, their daily life, their views on climate change and deforestation. We also wanted to understand how the EU regulation on deforestation for products could affect them. So we are here. I hope you will enjoy these exchanges and get inspired by these producers and fair trade activists as much as us.
We wanted for our first meeting to be a discussion with a cooperative of producers. This is how I got to know Yeo Moussa, director of an agricultural cooperative producing coffee and cocoa in Ivory Coast. He kindly gave me a bit of his time to discuss and to understand the challenges that his cooperative and fellow producers face at the moment. Hi Yeo, thank you for being with us. Could you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Hello Mr. Pierre, I'm Yeo Moussa, director of the cooperative Yeyaso Kopsia. Yeyaso Kopsia is a cooperative producing coffee and cocoa based in the western part of the Ivory Coast. The cooperative was created on the 24th of August 2006 with 350 members, including 10 women. Today, the cooperative counts 5,249 members, including 685 women, so it's approximately 12% of the cooperative members. It's a coffee cocoa cooperative, which is doing the certification Rainforest Alliance and a program on sustainability. And the cooperative is also engaged in the COH, also called Cocoa Horizon, and with a Mendelezing Cocoa Life program. For coffee production, the cooperative is engaged in a sustainability program named Common Code of the Coffee Community, also called 4C. So this is a little sum up of our certifications. And since 2017, the cooperative is engaged in a program to fight against child labor.
Thank you. In this podcast, we are particularly interested to understand how damage to the environment affects producers all over the world, whether it's climate change or other phenomena such as deforestation. Could you tell us a bit about the biggest challenges that are facing the producer from your cooperative and the measures you have been taking in your cooperative?
Global warming is not only something which concerns the producers, but it's a global phenomenon. I will talk about the situation in the region. Global warming is something which is visible and already a reality. To face it, we are working with the producers of the cooperative to teach new ways of producing, like agroforestry, for instance, which consists in associating different types of tree in the cocoa fields. For 2 years, our producers have understood the value of this practice and are engaged to follow us in this process. We are telling the producers that the cocoa has to be produced in a forest environment to have a better quality and also a better resistance. This is why the producers changed the way they were producing, adopted new practices, and stopped deforestation. Because what is happening is often that the producer produces cocoa and wants to expand and then cut the forest. This is not the idea. What we want is to do extensive production and not intensive.
And what about training to support producers in sustainable practices? Do you organize them for your producers?
This is actually a prerequisite element. I've already mentioned the certification for sustainability. We cannot be certified if we haven't done the trainings. So in our team, we have 6 people working on the field directly with the producers to support them in their training. These people are trained by a specialized institute before going to the field to be able to share with the producers knowledge and good practices. This is how we developed all the processes of agroforestry to restore forests and develop biodiversity. So yes, we can say that good practices are being taught to the producers. Every month, there is a training report from the field expliciting the specific topics of the trainings delivered.
Thank you. One last question for you. Would you like to share a special message to EU consumers? How could we better support producers?
The message I would like to share to conclude this interview is that today, producers are suffering from unremunerative prices. What is tricky today is that, as it is difficult for producers to have a good income, they will tend to do deforestation as they would think, I will have a bigger land to produce and therefore a bigger income. If prices were higher, I don't think people would then do deforestation. So the real question is the price which has to be paid to the producers. As long as the price is not good enough, we will carry on discussing and won't find any solution. Producers must be given a remunerative price. But until then, the best alternative is to support fair trade initiatives, which are today the best on the market.
Thank you, Yu, and thank you, Pierre, for this interview. That was great to have a view from the field on what is still challenging for smallholders. What is clear from listening to Yu is that a remunerative price of smallholders' production is the key for fair working conditions and a sustainable transition of agriculture. We still wanted to dig a bit further and to get points of view from different actors in different regions of the world. This is why we crossed the Atlantic, okay, virtually crossed the Atlantic, to meet Javier Aliaga-Lordemann. He kindly agreed to share with us some insights about the situation of smallholders in Latin America, in Asia, and in Africa. And he also gave us some opinions regarding the upcoming EU regulation on deforestation. So, Javier, could you first tell us a bit more about yourself?
Okay, thank you very much, both of you. I'm very happy to make this interview. My name is Javier Aliaga-Lordemann. I'm the director of the Center of Excellence on Climate and Environment for the forestry system. And well, my background is in environmental economics. I have a PhD on environmental economics. And I'm very happy to be here and discuss this very important topic for small producers.
Thank you again, Javier, to be here with us. So to get started, our first question is on the upcoming EU regulation on deforestation-free products. Our listeners already had the opportunity to learn a bit more about it in our first episode. So to come back to you, what is your views on this regulation at this stage?
Well, it is difficult to have a complete opinion on a regulation that is still under discussion. We are not against a regulation whose purpose is to limit deforestation and soil degradation, but we understand that a framework of incentives and mechanisms must be sought that allow a just transition toward this new regulation for small producers.
In your opinion, which kind of actors could have the biggest impact on producers' transitions to more sustainable practices? From companies to consumers to political actors, who could bring the most efficient support to smallholders? And we also wanted to know what kind of support is needed by the producers.
I strongly believe that all actors might be involved, including customers, because at the end of the day, this regulation is part of a consultation made by the EU to consumers. Some consumers must be part of this regulation, must support the transition process. The point is what we request for this fair transition. I think that's the main point. And we discussed this in our task force team. And of course, we need technical assistance. Of course, we need some commercial safeguards. But we need to start by defining our baseline. When we request for impact assessment of deforestation regulation on cocoa and coffee for small holders, we request explicit reference to human rights and especially land and tenure rights of local communities and indigenous people. We also need a specific support from the European Union to promote or to allocate resources for regeneration programs. So I think we need this because this is the way that smallholders will reintegrate. They need to change their coverage, forest coverage indicators, if not compliant. And the way to do that is by reforestation. So we need money to promote this transition, and the European Union must put some resources on this issue. We also request that small producers organizations have access to digital tools, to like remote sensing, because we need to improve and ensure traceability and monitor data, because every period of time, the European Union will check advances or disadvances in terms of deforestation. So this is expensive. And we also request for long-term contracts, because this regulation is costly and affects and increase the uncertainties of commercial activities. And if you want to support something that is really expensive, like technology or reforestation programs and so on and so forth, you need to have a long-term contract. If not, it's a very, very risky opportunity.
Last question on our side. What would you advise to consumers? What can they do to act for better working conditions for producers in the other side of the world, for better sustainability practices? What would you advise? What would be your message to share with us?
Consumers need to be more informed, and they need to search information. They need to find the information. It's part of the responsibility to search where is the information. But my dream is that when a consumer go to the supermarket and see coffee or cocoa or other products, they analyze and see, this products comes from fair trade. Ah, great. So they are respecting human rights and they are respecting environment. And my dream is that in the future, a consumer buy not only a product that respect human rights or respect environment, they may also buy a product that includes carbon sequestration, because if we increase the size of the demand, the price of the carbon sequestered will increase, and this is something that will create more incentive for organizations to push carbon markets.
Many thanks, Javier, for being here with us and for giving us a little bit of your time. Your interview was really inspiring and was really detailed regarding the upcoming EU law. Thank you very much. See you soon.
Okay, so hello to our audience, and let's welcome Ana. Ana is a local honey producer from Argentina involved in the fair trade movement. So Ana, let me turn to you and ask you a little bit about your background. Can you please tell us about you, your line of work, and basically how you ended up in this episode?
Hi, Carlos, and everybody who listened. I'm Ana, I'm from Argentina. I started to work in a honey cooperative, and working with small producers, beekeepers especially. At my first time writing different kind of projects to financing these beekeepers. So I get involved with my cooperative in that way, and then I start to the fair trade movement because my cooperative has the certification of this. No?
Okay, that's a very, very interesting start. So can you please tell us more about your work, more about your day-to-day tasks?
Yes, I 27 years old and I'm studying sociology. So for me, it's very, very, very interesting working with beekeepers and in the countryside and the rural spaces here in Latin America. Especially because I work in an ecoregion named Gran Chaco Americano, and it's in the north of Argentina, and it's the biggest, the second biggest forest after the Amazon. So it's really interesting because it's a very, very weird forest because it's very dry and you can see all the trees and the dry behind that. So that is really very exotic. So for me, it's really interesting working with the beekeepers in these spaces. And the forms of beekeeping are really different between ecoregions. You can see day to day a lot of kilometers of the nature of the different of the bios, no? So for me, that is my day to day. And then I work in the office most often to write a project and managing the project too.
Can you tell us perhaps a bit more about how your interest arose for being involved in the Gran Chaco Americano region and sort of the involvement more with the fur trade movement within this region?
In particularly because here in Argentina, the rural space are really known mostly for the soybeans and the extensive productions with the soya, the corn, and these kind of things, no? And even too with the coast, no? With the production of meat. So for me, it's really interesting to work in the different part of maybe the B side of the reality in the rural spaces here, because I work with the small producers and the medium too, trying to develop different kinds of networks to knowledge, sharing experience, sharing resources, something like a microcredit too, working in connectivity and the gender gap, no? So for me, when you work with the small producer, you can see other realities. And that is maybe my motivation reason to work in this movement.
Yes, indeed. And well, Argentina, of course, is as everybody knows, widely known because of its soybeans, as you were mentioning. But it's not so well known for its honey market. Can you please tell us more about perhaps the state of play of the honey market in Argentina, and more specifically, whether your organization exports perhaps products to Europe or to other regions?
This is a really interesting question because Argentina is the second biggest country to export honey in the world, in the global market, after China and then Mexico, no? And it's really interesting because that's an equivalent that the honey become to small producers, no? It's not equivalent at that. So you have two different models of beekeeping here in Argentina. You have the extensive model and you have the small producer model. So it's interesting to add in value and take the certification, not only for fair trade, if only to add the organic certification, no? So you have the both with the small producers. So this is really competitive and maybe the lack or maybe the fight between the biggest and the small, no? Here in Argentina mostly. But we trying to, with my cooperative, achieve the project to sell small hearts, no? With our own brand, to try to escape of this competition and adding value and getting more producers and getting better prices, no? To other product, yes.
Yeah, indeed. Now turning more into our topic, so deforestation. Do you witness deforestation in the area in which you work, or have you witnessed perhaps other organizations who have gone through this issue?
Yes, this is a biggest point because when I was telling you about the ecoregion where I am, so the Gran Chaco Americano is mostly known like deforestation or deforest, no? Because the deforestation advances more and more, and you don't have political decisions and economical decisions good for this, error, maybe, no, mistakes. And for us, it's a really big problematic, because when you produce organic honey, you need biggest area to produce good honey, you know, and trying to pass all the laboratory exams and the little hearts you have to take about the muestras, how can I say this, like samples of the beehives. You take a lot of sample and travel to laboratories and try to pass the contamination exams, no? And for us, a really difficult of this part, because you need a lot of hectares and kilometers of free forest, no? This is a critical event, because you have to fight more and more to try to have these areas. So for us, it's not a problem, the deforestation with the beekeepers, but the problem is the deforestation of the neighbors of the beekeepers, no? So you have to try to see the big picture and the landscape, maybe approach about this.
Exactly. Yes, as you were saying, I made a good reference of the neighbors of the beekeepers. So now turning into the regulatory side of things. So you might have heard that the European Union is currently working on a regulation that would essentially ban products from being placed in the market stemming from deforestation. Now, we know that your product, honey, would not be included in the scope of this new law. However, I wanted to ask you whether you have heard about this upcoming regulation and if you think it will affect perhaps other partner organizations.
Yes, for us, it's not a problem, because for the organic areas, as I was saying, but I know the situation and the problematic for the cocoa and the coffee cultures and the banana too, no? So for me, it's really critical at this point, because saying the neighbors of this small producer of this organization here in Latin America doesn't do the good things on the good ways. So it's really difficult for one small producer trying to fight alone about this, no, and with the neighbors and maybe the political forces in one country, you know.
Yeah, do you have perhaps any expectations of this new law or something that perhaps pops to your mind in this regard?
So yes, maybe I have one expectation about these regulation and laws. Trying to see the bigger picture, no? Trying to analyze the ecosystem, like in the landscape approach, and trying to get involved not only the forestation, but on this kind of product, because you have a lot of products to contaminate really more bad, no? And you have different kind of fragile and weak ecosystem, like the wetlands, the grassland in the whole Latin America, no? You don't only have the forest, you have a lot of kind of diversity of the ecosystem, so they are really important to different countries, no? For the whole world. And maybe I have this expectation, because if you put this law or regulation of one kind of product, you don't see really the bigger picture, maybe. You only see the commercial part.
Yes, 100%. And with that, Anna, we have concluded this episode. I don't know if you have any concluding remarks, perhaps motivational remarks for your neighboring honey producers.
Yes, no, I'm just to say thank you to you guys and Carlos for your time and for this open space to trying to get more, getting more involved with Latin America and the fair trade movement here, and for giving me the opportunity to share my experience. So for me, these spaces are really important to get better solutions now, because the young people and we are trying to get about this place, no? Yes, We want that. So I'm really, really happy to be part of this. Thank you.
So many thanks, Anna, for your participation in this episode. And yeah, we hope to have you sometime in the future again with us.
Thank you again, Anna. And thank you, Carlos, for this interview. Thanks to all our audience for being with us today. We hope you enjoyed your travel in producers' world and better understand the challenges they are facing. What has been underlined in this episode is that smallholders face today's high price competition. A fair price, a remunerative price, is needed for them to reach good living and working conditions. It has also been evoked that the EU regulation on deforestation-free products might be challenging to implement on the field. This position has been shared, of course, with decision makers, and we will have the chance to hear what's their point of view in our last episode, recorded in the European Parliament. Thanks again for listening to our podcast, and don't miss the next episode.